Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
Hi there and welcome to the programme. I'm Declan Ralph.
And I'm Dave Daly.
Coming up on the programme today, in a moment myself and Dave will be discussing some recent business headlines from the local and national papers. And in the business of this week, I'll be chatting with Gareth Stokes from Microfinance Ireland. They provide small loans through the government's Micro Enterprise Loan Fund to help startups and established businesses to expand.
Brian Green will be here again later in the programme to chat about a number of issues affecting small business. And this week, it's the imminent arrival of GDPR.
David Bell from the HR department will be here after that for his regular look at HR issues. And with college students finishing up their year and completing their final exams at the moment, this week we take a look at how to make sure you get the best graduates for your business or company.
And finally then, Roy Scott, who is the Global Privacy Officer Compliance from Flex, will be here. They are the sketch-to-scale solutions provider that designs and builds intelligent products for a connected world. And Roy will give us an insight into that world a little later.
Now, if you'd like to get involved in the discussion or you want to comment on any of the stories that we've mentioned there, well, you can get in touch while the programme's on air. You can contact the show by text to 087 69 44 500. That's 087 69 44 500. Or you can get in touch anytime on Twitter at Nearby Business, at Nearby underscore business either. I'm always forgetting the underscore. At Nearby underscore business, hashtag local biz.
Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM with Declan Ralph and Dave Daly.
So Dave, lots happening and lots in the news, both locally and nationally this week. And I suppose this is something that affects everybody in the country is insurance and car insurance, and an interesting story, an interesting investigation underway.
Yeah, the European Commission are investigating the motor insurance in Ireland and focusing on allegations that the industry has created obstacles for new players entering the market. And last year, following a series of raids, investigators are now analysing whether foreign companies are facing barriers to entering the Irish market. Investigators from the European Commission seized documents from lobby group Insurance Ireland last year at the IFSC. However, Insurance Ireland insists it's fully compliant with the law. Under examination is an application form used by companies who wish to join the organisation. The organisation, the umbrella group, is Insurance Ireland. The form requires a sponsorship from an existing member and asks prospective members to give the name of firms sponsoring their application. The benefit of joining Insurance Ireland is that it runs databases which give companies access to information on things like penalty points, driver licences and claims history. Now, under EU law, organisations are prohibited from creating a barrier which can restrict competition. Penalty points and driver licence information is held by the Department of Transport, and the data on claims history is run by a company called Verisk Analytics on behalf of Insurance Ireland. And membership of Insurance Ireland allows access to insurance links. There's a few different companies and organisations there, yeah, which host the information on fraudulent claims for its members. And it can also be accessed by semi-states and sort of non-members and self-insured bodies by the likes of CIE and so on. And the databases allow for automatic verification of penalty points, no claims discounts, and lists of insurance claims made by fraudulent people and fraudulent claims themselves. The European Commission is investigating allegations that Insurance Ireland has withheld membership from underwriters entering the market. And a company called Zenith Insurance, they pulled out of the Irish market in 2016, and in a statement it cited lack of engagement by us with Irish industry bodies. We believe this creates a market disadvantage for us and our partners. And the company, who are Gibraltar based, was selling insurance via a Galway based broker called Bump, and it's understood the Insurance Ireland rejected suggestions that membership of the organisation is a prerequisite to joining the market. And it argued that fees start at €5,000 and that non-members can access similar information it holds on databases. And it said it fully cooperated with the European Commission on its inquiries, and it said it was confident that its practices are fully compliant with competition law. Yeah,
one wonders.
You can't really say an awful lot on that. You want to be careful, allegedly, and all that kind of thing. But there's a few different intertwined organisations there, and we all know about the likes of front groups and all those kind of things. And it goes on to say in that article that the financial regulator are too concerned with the financial health of insurance companies and not of the service that they provide to actual consumers.
Okay. Well, maybe that'll change over time with a bit of consumer power as well. Lidl have invested heavily in ladies' football.
Yeah, great to see this. Growing from strength to strength, and so is ladies' football. Lidl Ireland has announced an additional 3-year sponsorship of the Ladies Gaelic Football Association, plus a $3 million investment. The partnership was established originally in 2016, and Lidl will now remain the official partner and title sponsors of the Lidl Ladies National Football Leagues. The reinvestment in the partnership sees Lidl Ireland committing to further series to a further serious support by introducing various initiatives and programmes at grassroots level to ensure participants at every level of the game reap the benefits of the retailer support. And that's a great idea. And since 2016, Lidl Ireland have invested more than $2.5 million in the Ladies Gaelic Football Association through programmes which include future stars of post-primary schools and club competitions. And Lidl Ireland's managing director, John Paul Scally, said, "At Lidl, we are extremely proud to continue to be the biggest supporter of women's sport in the country. The reinvestment in our partnership with the LGFA will see us invest a total of $5.5 million over a 5-year period. And as a brand, we identify with the association's ambition to drive, and we look forward to supporting and raising further awareness of the ladies' Gaelic football across Ireland."
Thanks, Dave. And we'll have more business stories as we go through the programme this evening. Coming up in a moment, I'll be talking to Gareth Stokes. He's the CEO at Microfinance Ireland.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest too in technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
And welcome back to the programme. Gareth Stokes is the CEO at Microfinance Ireland. He's with me now. They provide small loans through the government's Micro Enterprise Loan Fund to help startups and established businesses to expand. Hi, Gareth. How are you?
Hi, Declan. Delighted to get the opportunity to be on your show.
Not at all, Gareth. Tell us a little bit about microfinance, I suppose, before we get into things.
Well, what we mean by microfinance is providing funds to small businesses across Ireland who are finding it difficult to get funding from the commercial lenders. Predominantly, the startups are people that weaker businesses than banks will accept. And our target market are micro enterprises, small businesses with less than 10 employees and a turnover of less than 2 million. But that accounts for 90-odd% of all SMEs in Ireland.
Okay, and you're using the government's money, you're using the Micro Enterprise Loan Fund. Tell me a little bit about that.
That's a fund set up by the government as part of the Action Plan for Jobs back in 2012. And was set up to obviously help job creation. And our part in the Action Plan for Jobs is to provide these loans to businesses across Ireland, but with the ultimate effect that these businesses will employ themselves, will employ other people, and help grow communities across Ireland.
Okay. And tell me, I mean, in essence, I mean, you, what is the difference between yourself and a bank? How do you look at things differently, say, than a bank? I note that, you know, you sometimes help businesses that can't get a loan from a bank. So what's the difference from your point of view?
Well, our mandate, because we're a not-for-profit lender and government supported, we can actually underwrite credit at a risk level that a commercial lender could not do, and we're quite unique in the marketplace in that. We also don't take security from our customers, and that for a startup tends to be a huge stumbling block for them when they go to a bank, because a bank will always look for some level of security against the loan. So we do this on an unsecured basis. We also don't mark our rate of interest to the risk we are undertaking. So we're actually giving loans at a very affordable rate, which again would be better than what the banks would be able to do to this type of customer. But really it's there as a service to support businesses that can't get finance through normal banking channels or commercial lenders.
Okay, so there's no penalty for the enterprise in terms of getting the loan for you. In fact,
exactly.
It's competitive.
Other things we look at, we would be looking at people's credit history, of course, but if we would take a view that if a person, while they may have been in trouble in the past, if we can see a desire for that person to meet their commitments, we wouldn't hold any previous bad history as a black mark against them. So we are much more open to discussing people's problems in the past and helping them to get structured and set up for the future.
Okay. And you work closely with a number of other agencies like the Leo offices and the LDCs, the local development companies and so on. And is that something that you would suggest to people, that they come to you via that route?
There's two options. I mean, what I think is very important, if they're coming to us through the local enterprise offices, the local enterprise offices can offer them a lot of services above and beyond helping them process an application through to us. They can get training opportunities. We fund mentoring for successful applicants. There will be mentoring for people anyway. So they are very much the one-stop shop for SMEs in Ireland, and we're just and they then help funnel applications through to us. LDCs, likewise, are working very much with unemployed people and people on the back-to-work scheme. So if you're in that situation, particularly the startup, I would strongly recommend you go to the local enterprise office. But in saying that, over 50% of our applications come straight through to us. We also get referrals from the main banks in Ireland who will, with the customer's permission, refer them out to us if the bank declined them.
Okay, so the leads, so to speak, are coming from lots of different angles. Can you give us an example of somebody you've helped? Would you have a case study that you could share with us, or sort of give us a broad outline of the type of thing that you might get involved in?
Well, rather than get into any specific name of any company, because
sure,
I don't have the permission to do so, we are dealing with... when we talk about microenterprise, we're talking about the offices, the businesses you see on every main street across Ireland. These are not major organisations. They're not, in majority cases, exporters. They're your butcher, your baker, electricians, plumbers, solicitors, hairdressers, gyms. A lot of people are in baking, food manufacturing, cafes. It's the indigenous small businesses you see right across Ireland.
Okay, and typically what do they sort of use the money for, typically? What's it most used for, or what would it typically be used for?
It tends to be for startup costs and cash flow, and that will take account of probably 60% of all the funds. There's also a lot of businesses would actually come to us for what they'd call an expansion loan, so they want to expand the business further. As part of the business, they need to buy equipment or maybe a van, the tools and trade of the trade that they need to get themselves running. So it can be either working capital cash flow, or it can be for fixed assets.
Okay, so do you specifically exclude anything, or is it once? I mean, once it's as you say, it's a tool of the trade. It's in scope, is it?
Once it's to do with the business and to do with the trading elements of the business, it's not to take out other people's debts, it's not to pay taxes, it's not to do any of those type of things. So if it's specific to the business, we're delighted to talk to them. There are a couple of sectors we're not allowed to deal in, and they'd be the obvious type of ones. We're not allowed to get involved in gambling operations, alcoholic drinks, manufacturing or tobacco products.
Okay.
Apart from that, we will talk to, we're more than happy to talk to anybody.
Okay. All right, Gareth. And if somebody does want to talk to you and wants to get in touch, what's the best way to do that?
They can either ring us directly to the office here, or what is really very helpful, I think, to people is if they go onto our site at microfinanceireland.ie, because on that site they've been registered and come through. The application forms are there to download, the new templates for cash flows and various other aids to the people. But a combination of looking at that site and then hopefully give us a call or we'll ring you back if you come off the register on the site is the best way if you don't want to go through the enterprise office.
Okay, brilliant. Gareth, that's fantastic. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me this evening.
No problem at all. Delighted, Declan. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Gareth Stokes there, CEO at Microfinance Ireland, about that invaluable service really to small indigenous business, as he said, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker on the local high street, helping them with the tools of their trade. Okay, back in a moment, we'll be talking with Brian Green and we'll see what he's been up to over the last week. He hasn't been out on the road, but he has been busy and we're going to get an update from him on a couple of issues affecting small businesses over the next little while and in particular the imminent arrival of GDPR in the next week or so.
You're listening to Nearby Business on 90.3 Near FM. Every Thursday at 6 p.m, the local, national and international business news headlines with a focus on what affects us here in Northeast Dublin. Regular features on the programme will include the Business Of section, where each week a different industry or industry leader will be here to chat about what makes their business work. The latest tool and technology needed to make sure your business remains at the leading edge. HR issues will be discussed, as well as a particular focus on looking at matters from the employer's point of view. Being an entrepreneur can be a lonely pursuit, so there'll be a regular look at what supports are available for business in the local area. And a host of special features as well. Don't forget, if you would like to get involved in the discussion or comment on any of the stories, you can text while the show is on the air to 087 69 44 500 or at any time on Twitter at @nearby_business. Near FM's business programme is Nearby Business.
Welcome back to the programme. You're listening to Nearby Business on Near FM 90.3 and near.ie with Dave Daly and Declan Ralph. On the line, I am joined by our new businessman, Brian Green, radio.ie. Welcome to the programme again, Brian.
You can call me guinea pig, it's okay.
Okay, well, we call you that off the air anyway, you know, and a lot of other things. Can you tell me, have you any more orders? Last time I was speaking to you, you said you produced an invoice. Anything else happen?
Produced invoice and I got paid on it, and that was ahead of work to be done. I had my first meeting last night. It was at 8:30 p.m., a business meeting, and I just have to say, Google Maps, you've got to do something about the industrial estates of Dublin West, because it was just an absolute nightmare. It's so many between St. Margaret's and Blanchardstown. There's just billions of
Stadium Business Park, Ballycoolan, Blanchardstown Corporate Park. I know them all like the back of your hand, I can tell you. The old sales rep, I can find them places like a Warren, no problem for me.
I needed Rosemount, but Google brought me to the back end and the gate closed at 5. It was crazy. Yeah. But anyway, first meeting, it was 8:30. It was nearly 9 o'clock before I got there with the problems. And it was over at 11 p.m. That's very antisocial, and it's not an antisocial kind of industry that I'm in. And I just point out that, you know, the advantages of working for yourself is you can take that meeting, it's at a time that suits the clients, and then I was able to spend the afternoon with my parents this afternoon working on their computer.
Very good, and that's great, and I hope it went well for you and you hope you get something from it. We previously did a programme about GDPR. We did a section, we attended TechSure's convention or conference on it up there a few months back. It's imminent next Friday, tomorrow week, 25th of May, is when the actual legislation will be enacted and it comes into force. So I've personally done a few things in my own business. I've got a sort of a firewall, industrial grade firewall put in. We have encrypted some of the laptops. laptops and anything that has any information on it. And we actually got rid of all our old computers and chopped up the hard drives and got certificates for them and all that kind of thing. So if you're just going to talk a little bit about that maybe and tell us what your input is onto GDPR.
Yeah, well, because it's coming up so soon, I think people need to be thinking about it. But it's, as you say, it's tomorrow week, and it's going to come in. It isn't going to be an overnight people ending up being in trouble because of what they didn't do. But you do have to get things ready. So I'd say it stands for General Data Protection Regulation. But I think if you could think of it standing for Get Your Data Practices Road Ready, okay?
And there's too many R's there. You're missing an R, but anyway, we let you away.
I added a Y as well, but it's just, welcome this. This is about looking at personal data and monitoring it and how you handle it. And it's more about you telling the world, this is how I'm going to handle the data, this is why I need to have it, and this is how long I'm going to have it for, and then I'm going to get rid of it in this particular way, and you put that into your policies and display it. And that's not everything that needs to be done, but it is the spirit. I think you've got to look at why is this coming in. It isn't some law from Europe that's going to try and hurt businesses. This is about getting things done the right way, and they haven't been done the right way for many years. So I think if you could read up on it and put some things into practice, and from next Friday, people will be able to ask for their data from any company. They won't have to pay for that request anymore, and they will be able to expect a response within 1 month. And then on foot of a response, if people want to request to delete that data, similarly, they can just ask for it to be deleted, don't have to pay for that request, and expect it to be done in a timely manner.
And I'll just add to that, if there is a data breach in your company, and one of the ones I cited before, I think, is somebody who has everybody's email address and maybe bank account details on a key or a disk and it goes missing, you have 72 hours in which to report that breach to the data protection office. That's a serious one. Even sports clubs may have that information, So that's on the other side,
Absolutely. These things will need to be flagged to businesses, and businesses need to do their bit in finding out what they can about it. Can I just give a shout out for a local company who are dealing with this, the dataprotectors.ie, two lads in Donegal, and they set up a company and they're called the dataprotectors.ie. They've got some really good information on it.
Okay, we'll give them a shout. Priming grants, what have you got to say about them?
Well, if you're thinking about priming and you think it's got something to do with painting and decorating on your walls, it's not about that. This is definitely for young, small businesses who have potential to grow. So if you're a company and you're in your first 18 months and you're really, really small, you might be just a sole trader on your own, but what you're doing has potential to trade internationally and grow the number of people that work for you, well, then you might be in the position to apply for a priming grant.
And
you can get them.
Yeah, go ahead.
You can get them from your local enterprise office, all the details, up to 150,000 in grant available, but more commonly they're under 80,000 in grant, and then you match it with 50% of your own money.
And is that specific to any industry, or can it be anything? Do you have to be making something to do that, or can you be?
No, it can be manufacturing or services, but it has to, and it doesn't even have to be trading internationally now, but it just has to have the potential to trade internationally.
That sounds very good.
So services and manufacturing, that kind of covers a lot of things.
Also, I recently, a friend of mine is in business, got a grant to upgrade his website. I think he got about 2,000, 2,500 from Fingal, and that enabled him to do, once he was doing some business online, so it's moving some of his products online, and it's helping, we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the programme from Harvey Normans, but it was helping people to get online and do business online. You get about 2,500 to upgrade your site. Is that something you know anything about?
Not in particular, but I do know there is a lot of research grants, and similarly, you can get IT services from people who are in that service provision and the local enterprise office. There's 170 assistances for companies out there to be got. Now, not everything will suit every company, but there's a huge amount of support, and there is going to be one for your small business.
Very good. Brian Green, thank you very much. And I just want to thank you. We're nearly getting to the stage where we're getting out into the schoolyard from this programme. The edge of the school jumpers are becoming frayed. The trousers are getting a bit torn. The shoes need to be polished, perhaps. We're getting near school's out time at the end of the programme. We started on the 11th of January. And Brian, you've been a great contributor all the way along. And thank you for that. We'll be talking to you again in the near future.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brilliant. Thanks again to Brian. Just add my thanks to that as well. Dave, we've another news story about connected to something we covered in the last couple of weeks there. We were talking about Mark Little, who'd set up his new Neva business, and he was out there seeking some finance for that. But his previous business was Storyful that he sold to News Corp, but they're still losing a shed load of money.
Yeah, the Irish arm of media company Storyful has plunged further into the red and is sitting on a loss of more than 15 million. And the accounts were filed at the company's registration office, where they covered an 18-month period from December 2015 to June 2017. The filing showed at the end of last year the News Corp owned company was seeing an accumulated loss of 15.1 million. This is compared to a collective of 6 million loss it had recorded at the end of 2015. The Irish operation of Storyful has increased its staff nonetheless, numbers since 2015. On average, it employed 100 people by the end of 2017, from an average of 54 previously, in roles across its editorial, sales, marketing, technology, development and administration units. As well as operating an office in Dublin, Storyful has locations in New York, London, Hong Kong and Sydney. And Storyful was co-founded, of course, as you just mentioned, in 2010 by former news journalist of RTE Mark Little, to vet news sources and content online for other media organisations. And it was acquired by Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation in December 13 for 18 million.
Excellent. Nice day's work if you can get it. Now, coming up in the second part of the show, David Bell from the HR department will be here for his regular look at HR issues. And this week, we're going to look at how to make sure you can get the best graduates for your business or company. After that, Roy Scott, who's the Global Privacy Officer Compliance from Flex, will be here. And we're going to talk to him about intelligent products for a connected world. And we're going to get an insight into Roy's world as well. So all that to come on Nearby Business.
Download a podcast and catch up on your listening at near.ie.
Near FM.
And welcome back to Nearby Business. Now, don't forget, if you want to get involved in the programme, you can contact us at any time. While we're on air, you can text to 087 69 44500. You can get us anytime on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz. And on the text line this evening, in reaction to that GDPR interview that Dave just done with Brian Green, somebody came in to say that this GDPR is a load of nonsense and it was made up by companies just like the Y2K issue of the year 2000 was. So maybe they're right. Who knows? Okay, we're going to move on now and I'm going to talk to David Bell about HR issues.
Your HR questions answered on Nearby Business.
And David is with me now. We're going to chat, as I said, to talk about how you can make sure you get the best graduates for your business or company. Hiya, David.
Hi, Declan. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good. Thanks again, David, for taking the time to talk to us this week. I suppose, how do you go about this or where do you start? I mean, it's a great idea to be taking new blood into, you know, any size business, really. So where do you start? Where's the best place to start?
Yeah, well, I suppose the traditional way a lot of employers get recruit is you know, to put an ad in a paper or in a trade magazine if they're in a particular trade, or you know, use a recruitment agency or something of that nature. And obviously, there's lots of online irishjobs.ie, etc., where people go. But I think a lot of business and maybe professional services have been doing this for some time. And maybe business are now looking at that and seeing it's a good way of getting graduates early on in their career. So I think traditionally people do it, and it's nothing to stop any business doing it, is trying to identify perhaps where their current staff are coming from. So where have they trained? If they've done third level, where did they go to college? So what kind of places do they go? Do they hang out in? Do they get educated in? And maybe start looking at getting some sort of relationship with those colleges, where you can maybe arrange with their careers person to go in and do presentations, or you can go to a careers day and meet some of the graduates and explain your business and the fact that other people from that particular environment or that college or that discipline have come to work with you and for you, and it has been successful. So that's one way, I suppose, is getting in at the very beginning when these people who are leaving that third level education, or they're at the postgraduate or after school, or they're doing a trade, that they are ready to start going into the workplace, and you're getting them at the beginning.
Okay, and I presume that social media would play an important role in this now, given that you're going to be dealing with a world full of digital natives, as you so eloquently put it in your blog. I mean, that's going to be some way that people are going to assess your business as well. The graduates will assess you. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, look, we've touched on this before, and it's sort of, you know, you hear about the millennials, and you hear about you know, that they're less concerned about perhaps money, that they're more concerned about their career and what a business or an employer is going to do for them and how they're going to progress. So certainly, there's absolutely no doubt there are some businesses and some companies that are targeted by people who really want to work there. And, you know, without, you know, being too dramatic about it, they will do whatever it takes to get there. So, you know, not everyone is going to have that reputation. Not everyone is going to have that status. But there's nothing to stop you doing your best to get, you know, to think about who you're trying to attract and how can you attract them. So absolutely. So your website, your social media presence, your LinkedIn, anything that is visible in public should have enough information or information there that the potential employees can see, and you know, that, you know, again, the modern workforce is very interested in the culture of the business, their social responsibility. It's not just always about the amount of money they're going to get paid at the end of the month, at the end of the week. There is a lot more to it. So I think companies, again, it's nearly an advertisement for themselves, and certainly the younger generation, I think it's fair to say, are probably much more selective, perhaps, than they would normally be in maybe in you and I generation, where, you know, a job, to an extent was a job, it might have been a career, but nowadays they're much more
more discerning, I suppose. More discerning.
Where they want to go.
And I suppose if you've done that, say you've made contact with the colleges and you've got some connections and a bit of networking going on there, and then perhaps, you know, you're improving that social media presence to make it look good. At the end of the day, you know, people have to work with people, and people do business with people. So the fit of a graduate, or I suppose anybody that you're recruiting in the business, is going to be very, very important, because they have the qualification in the discipline you're looking for doesn't necessarily make them the right fit for the business. Would that be fair?
Absolutely. And you know, I suppose part of the problem is that you know, even with a rigorous and well-established interviewing panel and stage one and two, you are always taking a bit of a chance that with the person. As you say, they might have all the qualifications, they might impress an interview. But, you know, until they get into the business and see how the business works and see how they fit in, it is often difficult to establish how they're going to be. So one of the things that I suppose people would be familiar with are internships. You know, these are the type of things that can get bad press. I suppose there's no doubt, like all of these. I mean, an internship, just for explanation for those who aren't familiar with it, it is a sort of a certainly free or certainly low-paid work, usually done either around the time someone is coming to the end of their education, during summer terms or just after they've graduated. And, you know, traditionally they go into the business, they see how the business works, they see what's involved, they have the skill sets for it to grow, and it's something they're interested in. So it is a bit of a tester for both the employer and the employee to see you know, if it's something that could be potentially turned into a future role. As I said, the negative side of it is it's generally unpaid, and there's no doubt there are places that have, to some extent, I use the word not too lightly, abused the situation where, you know, it's unpaid labour.
Yeah.
But very, very often, if it's worked well, it's very successful, and certainly plenty of my clients would have it. Again, traditionally in the likes of advertising and marketing, IT, those industries would all have very well-run internship programs, and everyone would be very familiar with them. And, you know, the very successful, a lot of people who go in prove to, you know, work out very well and then are subsequently offered jobs. So, you know, it does have a place, I think, like all these things, that has to be care taken that there's no abuse in general. But, you know, a lot of people will pay maybe expenses or something like that to just to tide people over for the weeks that they're there. But it is a very useful thing to do. And it is, I suppose, like a long experience and better than a job interview to a large extent.
And is this something the domain of very large corporates and large companies, or would small to medium businesses be getting involved in this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Activity?
And I think even more so. I think if you can imagine as an intern, if you're going in with some level of interest or involvement or ability, you know, the smaller businesses, you might get a lot more exposure than a more traditional structured one. You know, you could find yourself dealing with things and going to meetings that people in bigger organizations wouldn't necessarily get the experience of. So I think it's very useful for all sorts of sizes of business. I don't think you need to have multiple layers or plenty of resources, provided you have someone, I think, that, you know, knows what it's about. I mean, I think if you are going to do it, I think you do have to sort of allocate someone to be in charge of it. It's not just a case of turn up on a Monday and we'll see how it goes,
yeah,
do a bit of photocopying. I think there has to be some structure and some logic around it. You know, we recommend doing some, you know, test cases without putting people under too much pressure, maybe some presentations, you know, to a small group of people, just the sort of things that they'd be expected to do in the 2 or 3 years' time that they might be looking for a job, just to give them a taste. And also it'll help their confidence, and also, I suppose, there's a learning element to it as well. So I think if it works, no matter what the size of the business is, it has to have a resource put to it, and they have to think about what's best for the company and also what's best for the people coming in.
And the smaller companies, would that be attractive to the graduates?
Well, again, I think it is, because, you know, there's a lot of businesses that people look at, and they might be attracted to the fact that the founders could ring a bell with them. You know, you mentioned Mark Little there, you know, sold his business for 18 million. You know, he's now set up a new business. So, is there someone looking at him? It's not going to be, imagine, that big. But is that someone who's already been successful, has successfully sold a business? So, you know, I think certainly within certain arenas and within certain worlds, there's definitely people who have reputations that people want to work for. And I think that's part of it. There could be someone that just has a niche in a market that doesn't have to be very large, but people interested in that world would know about them. So, yeah, I don't think it's unfeasible that it can be done.
Brilliant. Okay, David, as usual, a comprehensive look at that topic, and thanks a million for your time again this evening.
No problem at all, Declan.
Take care. That's David Bell there from the HR department for that usual weekly look at HR issues. And as usual, as I said, comprehensive look at all of that. Okay, now we're going to chat to Roy Scott. Roy is with me here in the studio. Hi, Roy.
Hi, Declan.
Roy is the Global Privacy Offer Compliance from Flex. Now, first of all, I suppose we'll get to what you do in the day job in a minute. But tell us a little bit about Flex, first of all, because prior to meeting yourself and your colleague Connor, I'd certainly never heard of Flex.
So Flex is probably one of the biggest companies in the world that you've never heard of.
There you go.
200,000 people globally, 30 countries, 110 facilities.
Excellent. And you certainly sound like you're a local.
Definitely a local. Northside Dub. Proud of it. True blue.
Great. Good stuff. So what type of things do Flex get involved? I mean, that's a very big business, as you said, located right around the world. Give us a feel for the sort of activities that Flex are involved in.
So a $25 billion company. We're across 12, 13 industries. Automotive, medical, aerospace. We also do networks and wearables, and we're also now making trainers, Nike trainers.
Excellent. Yeah, I was going to ask you that. I mean, you said one of the biggest companies in the world that I'd never heard of, and perhaps many people have never heard of, but you mentioned Nike there. Are there any other brands that we'd know, or any other products that we'd know that we use or consume in there? Maybe you're not allowed to say, are you?
Oh, you can. I mean, HP is probably one of our biggest.
Okay.
We would have done a lot of work for HP over the years, but now we're moving more into a sketch-to-scale philosophy, and what that means is we work with startups. We look at their sketches, for want of a better word, and then we bring those products to pilot studies and then onto scale where they can Make billions of euros.
You're basically the sketch is sort of the idea, the spark of imagination that somebody has, and then your job or your process is to bring that along all the steps right up to scaling that across the globe, I suppose, really, ultimately.
Absolutely. I mean, the footprint that we've got globally, I mean, 110 manufacturing facilities, we touch every aspect of manufacturing. So, you know, if people have ideas and they, you know, we feel that they can work and they're feasible, we'll certainly work with them and help them bring those to scale.
Okay, and where did Flex start? I mean, where did it come from?
It's a San Jose company. It started off with 50 people, or, you know, 40 or 50 years ago. And it's built from then. It was traditionally a contract manufacturer. So what that means was, you know, if you wanted something built, we could build it for you.
Okay.
At a cheaper price than you would be able to do it yourself, because that was the speciality. We moved into the EMS industry, which is electronic manufacturing services, so we added in a little extra values to the process. And then over the years, we went from designing and building and shipping and repairing. So a whole closed loop environment we were working in. And the latest then, we used to be called Flextronics. And so we've changed the name 2-3 years ago to Flex. Everyone called us Flex anyway, right? So we went for it. And now we've moved into that sketch to scale mentality, where we're moving away from huge manufacturing, more into localized manufacturing, smaller, higher margin business.
Have you an example of that that you could share with us?
I can't really, no.
No, that's okay. No,
Can I just ask you, we don't want
to give away any secrets. Yeah. Sorry, Dave.
Your technical side of the business, the injection moulding would be a big part of your business, or would have been in the past. And is 3D printing something that you do for prototypes? Is this the kind of area we're talking about, like moulding and plastics?
Yeah, I would have had a history in injection molding over the years as well. Flex would have done a huge amount of that, you know, Guadalajara in Mexico or in our European sites. 3D printing is also now developing. We do a lot of that in Austria. The turnaround time from building tooling components, you know, can be reduced to hours as opposed to weeks. So we can pilot stuff really quick. And again, when you're talking about sketch to scale philosophy, we can move stuff from the prototype into much more manufacturable product.
The electrical industry will be a big part of the business for you. The sort of switchgear and sort of switch boxes and things like that would be probably something that comes to mind.
Well, if you think about that, right, that's diminishing now because everything is moving towards cloud. Yeah.
Okay. No, I'm talking about switchgear in industrial applications for relays and starters and all that kind of thing.
Well, we'd be buying them, but that we wouldn't be actually making them.
And you're in the business a while, as you're sort of a probably of the same sort of vintage as myself, without giving too much away.
Maybe.
And how do you see that things have changed over the years? I mean, you mentioned there stuff. You know, we put stuff in the cloud now. Yeah. We don't hold it on physical devices necessarily. I mean, from a manufacturing point of view, the processes that are used. How has the thinking changed? How has it actually changed?
I started my career in Good Olds of Ireland down on the Clonliffe Road, right? Packing pallets and sticking bottles on the production line manually.
Right.
So we used to make the YR sauce down there, and we used to just pack those bottles on the line. So 8 hours, 10 hours a day, you'd be doing that, right? Automation started to come in, and then there was depalletizers and palletizers. So, you know, people were, you know, less with the mundane jobs. They were being replaced by the automation. So over the last 40 years, I mean, obviously it's developing at a rate of knots. In the last 5 years, it's gone exponential, right? But if you take your mobile phone out of your pocket, right, so we do mobile phone manufacture as well. So 5 years ago, there was 800 components in the mobile phone. Today, in your smartphone, there's 3,000 to 3,500 component parts. People can't do that anymore.
Okay.
It needs to be done by machinery, yeah?
Yeah.
So to get to the next level, automation has to be with people moving that product forward.
Okay. And is there anything that hasn't changed? I mean, is there a principle there or something that, you know, just sort of never really changes?
Well, I think your last guest talked about HR and getting graduates in, right? And I think if you get the right people and build the right culture within your company, because, you know, culture is the difference between your strategy and your execution. And if you have the right culture, that's the success that you build your business on.
Okay.
So that that shouldn't change, because fundamentally we're human beings, right? And we have the same issues. So what regards to what decade it is, it's just becoming a little bit more accelerated in the last couple of years.
Yeah, so people are probably the common factor there across.
I mean, look, I'm in the industry 40 years, and if you walk around the factory of a Friday afternoon and nobody is in it, nothing is happening.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You need people. People are important. Even, you know, you talk about cars being produced now who drive themselves to places and all, you know, and they're going to crash into the side of vans. They're looking at the prototypes. But you need people to buy your products, and you really definitely need people to help make them, because there are certain things machines can't do. And you know, there is a certain sort of a touch or a feel or a smell of a piece of kit that you say, that doesn't actually look right, or, you know, it can't be left to all the machines, I'm sure, yeah?
Well, people are getting freaked out that the robots are going to take their jobs. Mm. Nothing could be further from the truth. Yes, it's going to become really accelerated over the next couple of years, and, you know, the algorithms are going to replace certain jobs, but we're going to train for jobs that we don't know that we need to solve problems that we don't even know exist, right?
Yeah.
So it's just self-perpetuating.
So that's probably the future, you reckon? It'll be that, as you say, jobs we don't even yet know we have to do.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, really interesting. Tell us a bit more about yourself, Roy. Tell us, I mean, your day job is a compliance role. It's a global compliance role. Tell us. Yeah, so what, you go out with the big stick?
I head up, yeah, well, we like not to be seen as the policeman, yeah?
Yeah.
What we're trying to do is become more partners to the business. And I think anyone who's involved in audit or compliance can often be tagged as the police, yeah? Sure, there's times when we need to do, you know, those necessary deeds, right? But, you know, generally we like to work with the business to make sure they're compliant before anything happens. Yeah. And that's the strategy, certainly for me. I'm heading up the global department of a team of 12 people that work for me on a global basis. I'm also the Chief Data Privacy Officer, so it was great to hear Brian talk about the GDPR earlier on. You know, that's coming down the track really fast. For me, 110 facilities with 30 countries, a huge impact. So people say, you know, what keeps you awake at night? GDPR
is keeping you awake.
Just interesting. Yeah, I see the text. Thank you for your text, texter. You didn't tell us who you were. We'd love to know, but you're entitled to text anyway. But just saying, comparing it to Y2K, you couldn't go to jail for Y2K, or necessarily go to jail. You couldn't be fined, let's say, for Y2K. So companies can be fined for breaches of data, you know, which is personal data, which is different.
And for me, 4% of global turnover for a company like Flex is $1 billion fine.
Yeah.
So we're talking serious books here.
Mm. Yeah, there'd certainly be someone with a big stick after you if you got a fine if it was on your watch of that scale.
Yeah, and it's all about building your systems, building your processes. Yeah. But the key to this is training. Yeah. Train your people. And again, particularly for us, because we're so big a footprint, constantly training and constantly educating. So that's what it's about.
I think a thing people forget about with GDPR is that we're all obsessed with the computer and the memory stick or the phone or whatever's lying on our email or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. But actually, people tend to forget that it actually applies to paper on your desk. Mm. Like, if you cannot leave a CV, for example, open on your desk because a printed one, because that also is a data breach. Mm. So people have there are processes, there are manual processes as well, Roy?
Yeah, so, I mean, we can build in firewalls, we can build in IT security, and we have a whole department that look after that, as you can imagine, right?
Yeah.
But the key downfall in so many industries and so many businesses is the human factor.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's Dave with the memory stick, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, studies were done where you leave a memory stick sitting in an office. Someone's going to stick it into the computer to see what's on it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It could be loaded with viruses and who knows, right? Who knows? It's about the training and the constant getting top of the human factor, and I think the rest will follow.
And we started off by chatting to you and saying that you're a North Dub, you're a True Blue. You said you started work down the road there in Clonliffe Road in Goodalls and all of that.
Yeah.
What makes you get up in the morning to still do this job?
It's the people aspect, and it's I love people. I hate airports and I travel extensively, but when I get to the wherever I'm going, that's when I blossom. Yeah, because it's the interaction with different cultures, different processes. I love seeing manufacturing, right? But it's the people behind it and how it works. And that's what drives me. I like companies to do the right thing. I was a SIP2 shop steward for 6 years in another life. It's all about doing the right thing. It's about fairness, it's about equity. And I think if businesses can bring themselves to that level Everyone's a winner.
Excellent. Okay. All right. I think
we
leave it
at that.
Yeah, it is a two-way street.
It is a two-way street. Always will be.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks a million, Roy, for coming in to see us this evening. Roy Scott is Global Privacy Officer Compliance at Flex. And as he said, they are the sketch-to-scale solutions provider now that designs and builds intelligent products for a connected world. And basically just taking the sparkle of an idea in someone's head and bringing that right through to making that a global a phenomenon, maybe even. So yeah.
Thanks a million, guys.
For coming to talk
here.
To us
yeah.
this evening.
Yeah.
Dave, we're going to have a look at a couple of more stories. We squeezed them in maybe just before we finish up. Harvey Norman, who are well known with the great ads on the radio and some might say annoying ads on the radio, but yeah. that might be just one person's view of it all. Their CEO in Ireland is saying that that the popular narrative that we hear a lot of, and we've spoken about it here in the programme as well, that online retail is killing bricks and mortar stores, he says that is fake news.
Yeah, I remember this guy. He's an Australian. I think he's connections in Donegal. That's why he came to Ireland originally. And during the recession, he said he was sorry he came here because things were so bad. I think I remember reading that now. I'd be corrected on that, but I think so. Yeah, he's accused the media and the technologists of spreading a false narrative. He's the CEO in Ireland and has declared the popular narrative that online retail is killing bricks and mortar stores as fake news. In a fiery presentation at Retail Excellence Annual Conference, Blaine Callard suggested the death of retail is big business for credit card companies, technology firms and media outlets, but it doesn't accurately reflect the reality of modern retailing. There's never been a better time than now to be in retail. We're entering some kind of retail renaissance, he said. And he sort of really went off on one here because the retail apocalypse is big business. You better believe it. And I can't do the Australian accent. I won't even try. It used to prop up the stratospheric valuations and it makes a great headline. Callard said Amazon's recent $1 trillion valuation is effectively a bet and doesn't reflect the fact that the online retailer makes most of its money through web services and other ancillaries. During the 30-minute diatribe, the retail boss was particularly critical of journalists and how he dubbed them was time-poor technologists who never liked shopping to begin with, right? So he said technologists have this defiant...
Don't hold back.
Yeah, tell us what you really think.
Yeah.
Technologists have this defiant, trendy, Steve Jobsian, there's a new word, believe that technology will disrupt our old economy models, he said. He noted that 6 of the top 10 online retailers in America were born from physical stores, and added that more physical stores opened than closed last year. Callard blamed both Irish and American media for spreading false narrative around the online retailing trumpeting physical stores and accused some outlets of pushing fake news and misinterpreted statistics.
I think what's interesting about that is, and you know, you talk about bricks and mortar versus online, and one thing that isn't probably that widely known is that obviously Amazon are opening stores. I mean, they bought Whole Foods, the big American specialist grocery store.
Yeah, we did a thing on it here, didn't we? We played the piece. Yeah,
we played the piece on that. They're also they're opening their cashless stores, and they're opening bookstores and all of that because there's a challenge for the online guys as well. The other people who are opening stores now in China and have global ambitions is Alibaba, believe it or not, are opening physical stores. Why are they doing this? Because of what's called the last mile. They can't get the product to the shopper. The last mile. Because Dave's out working all day, Declan's out working all day, Roy is flying halfway around the world to meet all his colleagues, and he's not there. So they can't get the product delivered, and they need the physical store where someone can come and pick it up. Mm. And it's a great opportunity for the bricks and mortar retailers. He talked about Toys R Us as well.
He did, yeah. He mentioned Toys R Us. I didn't actually have that in. I didn't think it was of interest to our local listeners. But he said that the reason that they went were historical problems rather than those which were created by being online. He said that there was a debt industry. There were wounds. There were structural changes to the toy industry caused the problem to them. So I think that's what he's talking about rather than actual.
Well, yeah. The interesting thing there, Dave, is that there is a sort of a local connection to it in that, from an Irish point of view, is that Smith's Toys have actually bought the Toys R Us websites and physical locations in Europe, and Smiths are now going to go from Ireland and UK into Germany and some of the other Central European countries.
Best of luck to them. I hope it goes well.
Well done. Well, that's it for this week for Nearby Business. Thanks a million to all our contributors this evening. We'll both be back at the same time next week. Don't forget, in the meantime, if you have a comment on any of the stories featured today or an idea you'd like to discuss with us, get in touch with us on Twitter at @nearby_business, #localbiz. So for me, Declan Ralph.
And me, Dave Daly.
We'll see you soon on the radio. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.